It's time for the First Take Vegas Take, brought to you by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
Every day at 4 o'clock, we check in with the fellas on First Take. If you don't know, starting on January 20th, 10 a.m. our time, Jason Fitz is going to have First Take Your Take. That's nationally on ESPN News and on select affiliates around the country. Not this one, because we have Tyler Bischoff. We'd never take him off, but that is First Take Your Take, so we do the First Take Vegas Take. So thug is the word of the day. If you missed the story, John Beilein. Okay, Boomer. 66 years old. He's Adam Hill's favorite coach. Uh-oh. When you glorify a coach, sometimes it can come back in your face, can it, Adam? Sometimes it all comes crashing down.
It happens.
It does happen. People make mistakes. Or you may think it's not a mistake. Here's Stephen A. talking about the word thug. He is outraged.
I don't give a damn if he did say the word thug. I have been on the record saying this on many occasions. If I were a GM or president of basketball operations, I'd make sure to have a thug on my team.
Okay.
Okay.
Adam Hill, your reaction.
I don't know what it has to do with the topic.
Well, I think he's not bothered by the word thug.
Sure.
That's that he fine. doesn't believe there's a racial connotation to it, and that it's attached to mostly discussions about African American athletes.
Well, I mean, I think you can want to have guys like that on your team and still have a debate about the word and the topic. I don't know. It's yeah. I agree with where he's coming from. I think that you want to have guys that are, you know, willing to do the dirty work and to do things that, you know, might be looked at as, you know, not above the board necessarily. Just, you know, fight and scrap and claw and throw elbows and that sort of thing. Like, those are good guys to have around on the team.
Yeah,
you also don't have to refer to them in that way.
I get that. Bruisers, grinders.
Yeah.
I get it. But there is, in reality, a connotation with the word thug. I don't know. You know what? Another world you'd hear it in. Who's a rapper who's been in like a ton of trouble? Is T.I. a guy who's been in and out of jail?
Sure.
Okay, so T.I., right? Rod Stewart just got in trouble for a second time for assaulting someone, punching someone. Now he's 74. I don't think he's much of a threat now, but hey, you know what? He and his son went at it with a bouncer on New Year's Eve. The same thing happened, I think, some like 30 years ago with Rod Stewart, but he has a history of being a thug. Who gets called a thug more often, Rod Stewart or T.I.?
The second one.
Okay. Right? So it's an interesting language discussion. Watch on First Take when everyone tries to answer Stephen A. This is Dynamite.
Okay. No, Nick, and oh, by the way, you like to say,
are you comfortable with ever being called a thug?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I love that. No. That was Molly Karam coming in and asking Jason Williams, Jay Williams. I don't know why he doesn't want to be called Jason Williams anymore. Nothing wrong with the other Jason Williams. Or the other Jason Williams. But yeah, Jason Williams was in a debate here with Stephen A. Stephen A. saying, hey, you know what? I don't think there's any issue with the word thug. Jay Williams says there is. Here's Jay Williams, and then Stephen A. closes it out.
10 years ago, I would agree with you. I think in today's age, that locker room is a microphone, my friend. There is no more privacy anymore.
Well, if he said something, even though you want to say it's a microphone, if I'm talking to my team, if I'm having a private conversation with you, and I'm having a private conversation with Max, obviously y'all could go out and repeat it if you want to, but I don't have to apologize to what I say to you to your face one-on-one away from the public eye, even though it could go public. I don't have to apologize for what I said to you directly to your face.
All right, that's a whole different issue. Because Stephen A. started arguing that, hey, because it happened behind closed doors, basically, I think he was saying, hey, snitches should get stitches. By the way, do we know who the snitch was?
I have a theory.
Who is it?
It's Kevin Love.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Now, is this a virtue signal? Is this a continuation of his little war that's been going on with Beilein?
Yeah, that's what I think it is. Absolutely.
Wow. Well, that would be fascinating if he spoke up, if the African-American players did not care at all.
Yeah.
And Kevin Love is the one who started the issue and stirred the pot.
Yeah, 100% my theory. But I feel like with things that have been bubbling with him that have been going on, he clearly is not happy with the direction. He's on his way out. He's not really fitting in with Beilein. He doesn't seem to like him. All of those things just add up to me. I just think it would change the narrative and change the story so much if it's Kevin Love that was like, hey, guys, let's get upset about this, and I'm going to go tell the media, by the way.
So Stephen A., on the end of his comments there, that opened up a whole different Pandora's box. So he was saying that if the boss, and Beilein's the boss, if a boss insults someone, has a language violation, offends someone behind closed doors, was he going on to say that I don't have to apologize to you because it was behind closed doors?
No, I don't. I mean,
can we play it again? And Jason Williams is at the beginning of it. Jay Williams is at the beginning of it. I just want to hear this again from Stephen A.
10 years ago, I would agree with you. I think in today's age, that locker room is a microphone, my friend. There is no more privacy anymore.
Well, if he said something, even though you want to say it's a microphone, if I'm talking to my team, if I'm having a private conversation with you, and I'm having a private conversation with Max, obviously y'all could go out and repeat it if you want to, but I don't have to apologize to what I say to you to your face one-on-one away from the public eye, even though it could go public. I don't have to apologize for what I said to you directly to your face.
No, that's so I nailed it. So wait, he mentioned if I say something to you behind closed doors to your face, like Jay or Max. What if he said to Molly behind closed doors, you got a sweet ass? We good?
I mean, if she is okay with it, I think we're good.
Okay, well, but he just said if she went to management or went public with it, I don't have to apologize. I said right. It to your face behind closed doors. Like, what? Stephen A., what are you talking about?
Well, he just yells. He just yells to yell. You can't really analyze what he says. That's not fair.
Hmm.
He's just yelling.
So, on the language discussion, this is where Stephen A. confused me, and he's free to have any belief he wants. But on the language discussion, listen, he's one African-American who says, hey, thug, I don't take that as a negative connotation. What if I... Let me just give you some comments of like, things that I could say about Stephen A. See if there's any issue with this, okay? Stephen A. Smith is well-spoken. Stephen A. Smith is educated. You know why I like Stephen A. Smith? He's grateful for where he's at. Stephen A. Smith is far from lazy. We good with all those? Just straight-out compliments?
That was very complimentary of you, Steve.
Yes.
Very nice.
Okay.
I didn't see any tone or problems at all.
By the way, I've never made reference to Max Kellerman as well-spoken. Because, well, you know why.
Right. But I also...
Now, that was tongue-in-cheek, in jest. But there are certain triggers in language that have certain connotations, certain connections, and... Listen, Stephen A. is one dude. If he's not insulted by the word thug, that's fine. But if others are, then there's a discussion that needs to be had, and there's a discussion that needs to be played out in the organization and with John Beilein.
I guess what he would say is, you said that on the air, that's different. If you were talking to Stephen A., just you guys sitting down at Starbucks or something, and you said, hey, you're very well-spoken, that's impressive to me, and then he went public with it, you wouldn't have to go apologize to him. I guess is what he means?
I guess.
It's just, it's a
weird... I mean,
weird...
I can throw in, hey, you're really well-spoken. I'm surprised.
Yeah. I guess his theory is it's different if it's public or private, I suppose. But
Can I also throw in, I think standards change for people in terms of what offends them, insults them, as they move up the ladder, make more money, and feel like they've arrived and overcome.
Yeah. I mean, sure, it definitely does. But I think just with what he's saying and talking about the issue, I think regardless of whether you have to apologize or not or any of those things, to me, the fact that if it is a private conversation that it gets out, it's a signal that there is a problem that needs to be addressed. I mean, I think that's where, you know, you really should focus on this issue, is that it's not that it was said, it's not that he apologized, it's not any of those things. That's all just up for public debate, and nobody really knows the details of it. The problem is somebody, in you know my theory that it's Kevin Love, but somebody thought it was important enough, or thought there was enough friction in the locker room, or enough of an opportunity to make it something that they went to the media with it, and that's where it just becomes a different issue.
Make sure to tune in each day at 10 a.m. to ESPN News or the ESPN Radio app for First Take, Your Take with Jason Fitz. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, it's a Thursday. Time for another Coach Joe Knows.
Coach Joe Knows the Thug Life.
Yes. But we'll get into that. We got to get into language because we got Roy Williams with something that's interesting. And I might have to give credit very early on in a bet we just made to Coach Joe knowing more than me. But that's coming up in less than 10 minutes. All right, what's your take? John Beilein has a sterling reputation. Nice guy, 66 years old. Did he slip here? Are you mad at the players or player for snitching on him? What's your take as a coach?
Well, I probably think that he probably slipped. I mean, I've known him for a long time. He's a good man, and he's a great coach. And I'm sure he didn't mean anything offensive by what he said. However, you know nowadays how guys take things out of text sometimes. But I think what happens in a team meeting in something like that where you're with your team and it's private, I think you got to keep those things within the team. And for somebody to go out and say that, there must be some issues with the program. There must be some issues with him and his players. So I'm not a big fan of guys that go and do those things. I mean, if every coach was thrown out there like that, you wouldn't believe some of the things that would have happened. So
Joe, where does a player go, though, if he's concerned about something a coach said to him or the way a coach is talking to him?
You know, you got to go to the coach. You got to start with the coach. You got to go into his office and shut the door and say, hey, coach, I'm not satisfied, or I'm not happy with what's going on. And I think that's about just kids today. You know, we tweet, we text, we go to the portal. You know how I feel about the portal. And I think kids don't learn how to confront things and how to get through things and how to develop. And it's my own kids, any kid. And I think that's what's happening in our society today. And unfortunately, it's sad. But you need to go to the coach. You need to be up front. You need to talk man to man. And I think you can clear things up. And Beilein would definitely have an open door policy. I'm sure he would, and I would be shocked if he wouldn't have talked with the young band or whoever it was from there on.
Joe Esposito's with us here on this Thursday, Cofield and Company, as we're talking a little college basketball. We're hoping to track down Bruce Pearl from Auburn in about 25 minutes and talk about the awesome start that his Auburn program is off to. So let's talk language again with Roy Williams. So Roy Williams threw a quote out there. I'm sure he's using it as motivation. Maybe not. So what did he say about his current Carolina team, which is, boy, they have fallen apart without Cole Anthony?
Well, they have. And,
especially,
you know,
second half. They're just playing terrible in the second half.
They're really playing poor, and I think he's just so frustrated. You know, after the Georgia Tech game, you know, they fell behind to Georgia Tech 19-2, and then it was 27-4. And by then, you know, I just think that, you know, Roy's now at 8-7, and he's frustrated. And on his TV radio show, he said he's the most upset, most disappointed he's ever been in his life as a basketball coach. And he called his team the least gifted team he's ever had. Now, to me, you recruited those guys. So, like, I mean, if you're going to throw something out there like that, you got to be careful, especially for future recruits and whatever have you. They're not the least talented team he ever had, I don't think. Cole Anthony's hurt. I mean, that's been the issue. If Cole Anthony's out there playing, you know, I think that they're a different team, and maybe some of these games went differently. He doesn't have a backup point guard, and that's really showing now pretty poor with their guard play. But, you know, he's in danger of missing the NCAA tournament. He's only missed it one time, his first year at Kansas. That was 1988-89, his first year at Kansas, he didn't make it. He's in jeopardy of not making the NCAA tournament. But I'll tell you this, he's my number one pick to win the whole thing in the NIT.
Okay.
Because Cole Anthony will be back. And if Cole Anthony's back, we'll bet another pizza. UNC wins the NIT.
I don't know if I was accepting the bet. You throw out terms. I'm not even sure I want to take the bet.
The last bet, you pressured me. You gave me two games.
I did.
And I, you know, we'll talk about that in a little while.
Okay,
but
you know what? I'll take the bet.
We'll do the pizza.
There you go.
And a Stromboli. We'll throw a Stromboli in.
I'll take the bet.
All right. We got the bet.
So I say North Carolina will not win the NIT.
I was saying they will, and that's for the pizza.
Now, if they make the NCAA tournament, I still win.
I'll give you a Stromboli.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I see.
Can I jump in on this
one? Now, what's this guy doing?
Yeah, Adam Hill's over at
First
Pizza
of
Rock.
All, keep your block charge call to yourself.
Oh, we got to get to that in a
second.
Yeah,
just keep it to yourself.
No, give me your take on Roy Williams in Carolina.
You know that a book in town, one of the most creative things I've ever seen, put these up this week? Odds to win the NIT?
Oh, baby. Who's number one?
North Carolina's the favorite.
Of course.
12-1, though.
12-1.
Yeah. So the bet I made is pretty smart, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you can make the bet right now, put money down, and then pay him off, and then collect the rest of the money yourself.
There we go. I thought it through. Of course, yes. I didn't know those odds were posted. So last thing on Roy Williams, is he looking at this as a motivational tactic to tell guys, hey, look at the situation we're working through in Vegas right now. Now, Otzelberger hasn't come out and said, hey, we don't have a lot of talent. This is the least talented team I've coached. But in a way, he's been creative in saying that, hey, we don't have awesome talent. We have to work hard. It's just a better way to do it, right? We got to be max effort. We got to rebound. If you're not rebounding, then you're not playing. That's better than just saying, hey, we're not gifted.
You're right. It is better than saying you're not gifted.
Because you can lose your players. In Williams' case, like, what? Wait, you recruited me. Now you're saying I'm not gifted?
No question.
Screw off.
No question. And then how's that going to be when the other kids come on campus and are hanging out with them at night and stuff? You know, you got to be careful with all those things because those repercussions, things you say, can hurt your recruiting, can hurt your program. And, you know, Roy Williams is in a situation now. He's a Hall of Fame coach. He's done incredible things. He can pretty much say whatever he wants, but you got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And another guy that said a little bit too much this week, 3 blind mice. I mean, Bobby Huggins was at it again. And this time, though, I think Bobby was more calm than normal. I think he was more calm than normal. He didn't berate the officials. He didn't say it was lopsided. It was a home job. All he said was he called them the 3 blind mice, and boom. You know, you say one thing about officials, and they're going to protect them. And what he did say is, I know what their paycheck is. I know how much money they're getting for those games. They need to do a consistent job and be more consistent. And who blames it? Most coaches want to say that, and you just can't because put $10,000 to Bobby Huggins, it's no big deal.
Right.
No big deal.
Adam, give Joe, and I know he heard it, but give it to him again and give the audience your take on the block charge because we talked about the block charge calls last night a little bit in the UNLV game, and we feel like at this point the block charge is like a 50-50 call, which I don't believe it's 50-50. I think 10%, 15% of the time it's actually a charge. But what's your take on how to change things?
No charge. I mean, on a guy that's – if it's a primary defender and you're throwing him down, fine. But if you're coming over on help defense and just stand there, there's no charge. It's block or nothing. And I'm saying, you know, it's not going to fix everything, but it is going to stop guys that don't play defense that are just trying to stand there because for the most part, they're not taking charges anyway. Like, if you watch, they're not in position. They're coming over late. They're coming way after the play is already developed, and they're still giving them charge because they want 50% for some reason. I don't understand what they're doing out there. They have no idea. I'm pretty sure if you sat refs down and had them make a call after the game with replay and call it during the game, the same refs will make different calls like 60% of the time.
You know, it's always been an issue. That's been a call that's a very, very hard call to make. As you know, does he have position or not? Well, they put the semi-arc in there. We don't want to call it the semicircle in there to prevent guys from sitting underneath the basket and taking those charges as a primary defender. And you know, you got to have some type of call. You just can't go in there and barrel guys over. I mean, that's the object of the game is to not be as physical. They're trying to take away, you know, they take away the hand checks and all that other stuff that they've done through the years, and they've tried to watch the block charge call. But it's a tough call. It's a tough call to make. I know that there's a lot of them that sometimes go the wrong way. But on the other side of it, they are trying to prevent guys from flopping. If you saw at the end of the Texas Tech Baylor game, you know, they had two guys flop in the last play, and they end up giving the technical foul, and Baylor ended up winning by 5 when it should have been a 2-point game. And, you know, Tech would have had a chance to play some defense, but they flopped. I don't know if you can get rid of it. I don't think you can do that. I think you got to do something to protect the game. I mean, if guys would just put their head down, you just get a bunch of strong guys, put their head down, and just barrel themselves all the way to the basket, I don't see how that would help the game of basketball.
Well, that you can't just do that. You can do it because if a guy's covering you, you can't run him over. I'm talking about help side defenders, guys that aren't actually covering you, stepping in and trying to take them. There's no charge on those plays. And, by the way, the circle, while I applaud it, it ruined it. Because now the refs have another thing to look for. They already can't watch the game. They already can't keep up with the play. Now they've got to look at a guy's feet. So you got to look down at the feet and then look up at the play. You can't do both of those things. It's made their job even harder, and they already couldn't do their job anyway. It's a disaster.
Well, all those calls were happening so close to the basket. So what they're trying to do is prevent guys from giving that help side. So if you're making a help side, you'll say the guy drives baseline, and you're a basketball guy, Adam, and you understand the game, and the guy's on a weak side, and he's coming across. He's now got to get outside that arc. Before, he would just stand under the basket. The guy would lay the ball on the hoop, and his forward momentum progress would bang him and knock him over. So, I mean, it had to do something. And I think, you know, that's what they did. And I think it's helped the game from I saw it all the way through. I've been coaching a long time and seen all the way through. And I think it's definitely helped the game. But I do agree with you. It's a hard call to make. And unfortunately, I don't know how else you can improve it. I just don't think you can get rid of it.
All right, guys, sit tight. Quick timeout. On the way back, we're going to talk about Joe's top 25, or top 21, as it turns out, because he's got the blackjack theme that he's putting out just about every day. And we do want his take on UNLV and Boise last night. San Jose State taking out Reno. And, man, there are big problems. Not so many pats on the back this time around for Utah State and Craig Smith.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas. Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota Studio.
College Basketball Insider Joe Esposito with us here in our Findlay Toyota Studios. Adam Hill is manning the hockey festivities over at Pizza Rock, Green Valley Ranch. Get in there. Happy hour's going on right now. Food and drink as low as $4. And VGK will be all over the screens tonight against the Kings. We'll have a breakdown of the game in the 5 o'clock hour. All right, the Blackjack top 21. That's your you're not doing a top 25.
Ah, you don't need top 20. We live in Vegas. We all need right. top 21. I'm not okay. messing with 25.
Right.
And plus, it's too many teams to rank. I mean, especially now, this season.
You're having trouble on the back end? Might be having trouble in the top 10.
Nah, I'm not having too much trouble in the back end. I mean, it's harder than you think. All these people think, this top 10. You start doing it, and you start doing it every day and looking at it, it gets harder and harder because teams are so much parity this year in mm-hmm. college basketball.
Which, by the way, Adam, is that a bad thing? Parity?
No, I don't think so.
I think it's awesome.
I enjoy it.
I think the tournament's going to be insane.
It's going to be the best tournament I think they've had in a long time.
Now, they may not get all glamour programs in there, but you can already see none of the top 10 teams can win consistently. No one can hold on to number one. You have been very high on Baylor all season. Why?
Love them. Absolutely love them. They beat Butler. They beat Arizona. They beat Texas Tech. They beat Villanova. They won 11 in a row. They got some great guards. They play four guards. That kid Vital is a heck of a player, boy. One of the toughest players out there. I love Scott Drew. They should be my number one right now. But I couldn't, you know, Duke. I mean, Duke's beating Kansas and Michigan State, Georgetown. They won at Miami. They lost that one game to Adams' guy. Adams' homie, Brad Underwood's team. Old team. Stephen F. Austin.
They're playing well.
Yeah, they're playing well, and Duke's right there. They had a good, you know, they struggled a little bit against Georgia Tech, but I'm really a big fan of theirs as well. You know, and then you start looking at, like, Auburn, who we're going to talk to Bruce Pearl. They're 14-0, but who have they beaten?
Ooh.
You know, I mean,
going to say that to his face? You going to tell him he's only number five?
Luckily, it's through the radio.
Sort of to his face.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, they beat NC State's their best win. So he hasn't really played a really demanding schedule. Now, I don't know if he toned his schedule down after that Final Four run or not, but then you can argue about a lot of teams. So it's tough doing this top 21, but I feel like I'm right on right now with the top teams and top.
Adam?
What's that? Is he on? Is he right on?
Who don't you like on there? I mean, just go ahead.
I've been critical of Drew's coaching, but he's been good. He keeps finding guys. He keeps turning them into something. It's hard to argue with results like that. They looked really good again. That's a good team. So I mean, I think that they are justified to be high on your list and to be one of the elite teams in the country. I just think it's going to change so much as we get into conference play and we see all these teams falling anyway. Now that they're going to be, you know, conference games and on the road, it's going to shake up a lot between now and the end of the year. Even your exemplary list, that's better than the AP list, is going to change a lot.
Well, I think you're right about Scott Drew. Something I'll tell you about Scott Drew is he was able to adapt. You know, he used to play all zone, and he's playing more man. He's playing more pressure defense. He had a great play to get the ball in bounds against Texas Tech their last game. He lined up everybody on the baseline. I don't know if you guys saw it. He lined them up in that football play where you can't face guard the guy. So everybody's standing there on the out of bounds. They're running like a football pattern, and they get the ball in. Tech has to foul. I just think he's a guy that's willing to change. He's got, and one of our former players is there from UNLV. You know, JTT's there, and he has nothing but great things to say about their program and how much there's great chemistry there. And I always think Baylor's a team that can compete, and they always have.
We have a bet on San Diego State. We made the bet last week. I was really banking on Utah State turning things around, being ready to go. They really didn't compete for much of the game. They were down double digits. They wound up losing by 9. Our bet on San Diego State is over under 2.5 losses in the Mountain West Conference. And Joe's like, he's sending me pizza emojis. He's celebrating the win. We still got time. I went over, by the way, 2.5. Joe went under.
Well, you know, Utah State's falling apart. I mean, they're falling apart. The big fella, since he's been back, they're 3-3. And just think, the games that they won when he played, they beat Florida, he played 10 minutes, he didn't score a point. They beat Fresno, he played 10 minutes, he scored 6 points and 1 rebound. And then against South Florida, he had a good game, he had 29, but South Florida is not very good. So he hasn't really done anything.
Okay, you know, he's not, lost well, three first of all, he's not healthy. Now, here's the question. Will he be healthy at any point in the season?
I don't know.
He's not 100%.
Is their team healthy?
That's the other one. I thought when Utah State was here, that looked like a completely different Sam Merrill to me. He looked kind of doughy in terms of his build. He was getting really frustrated with defenders up in his face. He wasn't breaking people down off the dribble. Not that he's a speedster, but he didn't look right either.
I think he's tired. I think he's worn out. The guy that's been playing really good for him is Bean.
Yeah.
I mean, Bean's been doing great for him. He leads the league in rebounds. I mean, whoever thought that he would lead the league in rebounds? He's doing a great job for him. But when you look at Utah State, you know, they're last in field goal percentage. They're last in three-point field goal percentage. They're second to last in rebound margin. I mean, they're just having a bad conference start, losing to UNLV, losing to San Diego State, and losing to Air Force. It's going to be hard for them. I don't know what they can do, but the big fella, if he's not well, he needs not to play. He needs to, because I'll tell you, his stock, I don't know how high it was when he was going to leave, but it's got to be declining right now because he's not playing well and they're not winning. So I think there's a chemistry thing there. I think when he's out there, they want to force the ball inside. They don't want to force it into Bean. They played more of an outside perimeter game when the big fellow wasn't in there. So it's going to be interesting to see how they end up doing the rest of the season. But they're falling quickly, and I think the league's down. The league looks down to me. The Mountain West looks down to me. It really does. I don't know. It looks like a one-bid league unless somebody picks it up here soon.
Adam, what do you think of the league?
Well, I mean, obviously San Diego State is really good. So, that helps kind of bolster the league numbers a little bit because they're going to be good throughout the season. But I think you're right in the sense of Utah State not being what everybody expected. If Utah State was what everybody thought they were going to be with San Diego State, all of a sudden you've got two really, really good teams for everybody to kind of compete with and shoot for, and they're not there. And obviously Reno is not what they've been in the past as they try to move on from Musselman and didn't leave a whole lot of guys there. You've got San Jose State, who looks a little bit better, or are they just kind of stealing some wins here at the beginning of the season? I mean, when they start winning games, I think you could start to say, hey, the bottom is coming up a little bit.
Right.
That means the league is good, but I just think the pack is coming back to the bottom.
Okay, I'll say that I believe Utah State can bounce back. I also believe that New Mexico can get on a run here, and they could be the, you know, a 13-5, 14-4 team in conference. They're already out of the gates at 14-3 overall, and I actually do think Reno can be good. That is a weird spot last night. I thought they were going to have trouble covering the number. I didn't think they would lose, but that gym's a nightmare. There's no one there. Reno is taking on Utah State this weekend. Massive game. I still think there are three or four teams that can have really good seasons and put up gaudy marks. Now, you're right. You're right. They can't lose to San Jose State. They can't lose to freaking Wyoming. Frankly, everyone has to take care of business on the top against Colorado State and Fresno as well. That said, I don't know that that's going to happen because Fresno's a weird place to play at on the road, and Colorado State certainly is.
And the other thing, Steven, you mentioned New Mexico, and I'm extremely high on Weir, and I'm extremely high on their talent, but how long are they going to be? I mean, these cases are,
yep,
they seem to be settled, but are they? I mean, they're back playing. How long are they going to be playing for? Are they going to, you know, have issues going forward in the season? There's some pretty horrifying allegations out there against players on that team. So How does that affect them going forward? So that's an issue too.
You know, those are hard things to deal with as a coach. You know, when your team is unsettled like that and you have an opportunity to not know who's going to be out there playing on your team, and guys get in trouble and you lose guys and it messes up your chemistry and who plays, and then somebody takes their place. You know, somebody was playing for Bragg before he got out of there, and now he's back. Well, who lost those minutes? And then trying to keep that chemistry together, it's a lot more difficult than you think. When you're that coach and you're thrown in that situation and you got to try to make everyone, I wouldn't say happy, but try to make it fair and try to keep the team playing at the highest level they possibly can play at, it makes it real difficult when you have guys that are in trouble and their deals are pending.
We'll hit the bottom part of Joe's top 21, and we're going to try to hunt down Bruce Pearl from Auburn here on Cofield & Company on Thursday.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
More college basketball talk here on this Thursday. Coach Joe Esposito. Coach Joe knows. He's in studio with us. It's Cofield. Adam Hill is getting ready for the big hockey tilt tonight. Kings and the Knights over at Pizza Rock, Green Valley Ranch. I'll tell you, just a couple minutes ago, I fought and I fought and I fought on Joe's rankings. I think Auburn should be number one. Joe said, no way. Bruce Pearl's on the horn here. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, guys. How y'all doing tonight?
I'm good. This guy's unbelievable. To my left, Joe was, he said you guys are really good. What were you saying, Joe? Why are they only number five in the country?
Coach, I said you're great. Don't listen to him. I don't know what he's talking about, Coach. I don't know what he's talking about. But I did say there's a lot of people out there that aren't giving you the respect that you guys deserve. And one of the reasons is they're talking about the schedule. Now, I try to tell these guys that scheduling is one of the hardest things to do. Who wants to go play a home-and-home with Auburn? So what is your – hey, Coach, what is your take on it? And what do you think about the whole deal with your team not getting the respect that's due?
You know, I appreciate that, Jay. Listen, we're fifth in the country. I mean, that's you've come a long way, baby. You know, as far as Auburn's concerned. And so it's not a matter of where you're ranked now. It's a matter, you know, where you're going to be ranked at the end. And so I'm not concerned about it. I think we're getting enough respect. You know, listen, we are a good basketball team. We're not even very good yet. And I say that in the sense that we got a lot of work to do. So if your eye test is there, we don't shoot it great. We lost three of our best players to the NBA a year ago, but these guys have found a way to compete and beat the teams on our schedule. And of course, we're going to find out a lot about us Saturday against Georgia, and then next week we go to Alabama and Florida. So we're going to find out in a hurry, you know, just how good we really are.
You know, Coach, people out here in Vegas might not know everything. Everyone knows who Bruce Pearl is, but you know the things that you've done through your career, Southern Indiana, you won a national title. At Wisconsin, Milwaukee, you know, you were in a Sweet 16. Never happened there before. Tennessee, Elite Eight, that's never happened. Now Auburn, you take your team to a Final Four last year. Tell us what was special about that team and that group of young men that you coached last year.
Well, you know what? These guys came to Auburn to make history. They came here and promised they were going to be competitive. And one of the cool things that doing it at some place where it's not done all the time is that they're legends right now. You know,
no doubt.
Go some places and you win and you're supposed to win. You come to Auburn and, you know, it's not necessarily the case. And the biggest thing that they did, they trusted each other. They made each other better on the floor. We were a special three-point shooting team, and so we spread it and shot it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the chemistry. And listen, last year in college basketball, there were great teams.
Yes.
I mean, Duke was a great team. They were loaded with incredible NBA all-stars. Gonzaga was a great team. Those two teams at Kentucky was a great team last year. Didn't get to the Final Four. You know, there was nothing spectacular about the Final Four, but there were a lot of really, really good teams. So for Auburn to get there a year ago was significant. This year, I think college basketball is going to be as wacky a year as there has been in a long, long time. The differences between the best teams in leagues and the worst teams in leagues is just not very much.
No doubt. You know, hey, your last game you guys played Vanderbilt, and I know you guys struggled against Vanderbilt. There was a team that was kind of one of those ones on the schedule that for some reason you guys couldn't get by. Last 15 times you played, you were 2-13 against them, and I know they've won 4 times out of 5 in your building. And you guys end up winning that game to go 14-0. But more importantly, it was a big game for that senior class. who broke a record. Tell us about those three seniors.
Denzel Purifoy, Avery McLemore, and Austin Wiley have now become the winningest players in Auburn basketball history over a four-year period. They already own the single-season record a year ago. They own the three-year, and now they own the four-year. If they can win, if we can win 26 or more this year, then they will own the two-year record. So, again, it is about making history. It was significant, and it's something special about seniors. Mm-hmm. Look, I got absolutely no problem, and never have, with the one and done. It's sort of a bad thing. Well, let me tell you something. If I could have gone to Boston College in 1 year and got out and got a job in coaching, I'd have signed up for that, or to go work for a Big Eight accounting firm, or to get a really good job. And so if somebody's able to go to college for a year and sign a multi-billion-dollar contract, well, look, that's our job, to try to help get those kids prepared for life after college. If life after college in 4 years or 8 years or 1 year, who cares? And I just think it was obviously really special.
Coach, is the SEC down? I mean, seven teams last year, go to the NCAA tournament, four go to Sweet 16. Is your league down this year?
Yeah, a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with being down a little bit. Look, last year, combined, the ACC with 13, the SEC with 12, put 25 players into the NBA on draft night. I mean, the next closest league was like the Big Ten with 6. I'm just saying, we lost a lot of great players, and we had some guys that left and went early. And so, yeah, we've got, but I will tell you this, the league is better in the middle, it's better in the bottom, and it may not be as strong at the top. Look, last year, Kentucky, LSU, Tennessee, those were three teams that were Final Four good. Ben Howland's team was Final Four good. And obviously, Auburn proved we were as well.
Coach, The Bachelor, did you watch it this week?
Oh, come on now. I've never seen The Bachelor, ever. I'd never seen it, God's honest truth. I didn't miss a minute. I sat there and watched Madison Pruitt the whole time.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
You want to go ahead and explain what that's all about?
Well, your director of operations' his daughter is on the show, and she represents herself extremely well. She's a great Christian girl, and it's good to see those types of people on that show.
It really is, and obviously it was just one night, but I hope that they are able to bring out just what a special, lovely Christian young lady she is, and I guess it says something about the young man that he has something, he's got some substance in him, that's somebody that at least on the first night, it looks like she is somebody that he's pretty serious about. So. Anyways, very happy for Madison and the Pruitt family, and obviously, I know there's quite a cult following with the Bachelor. I guess for this year, I guess we're part of it.
That's great.
That's the voice of Bruce Pearl, coach at Auburn. Joe and I have fought tooth and nail the last couple of weeks about the transfer portal. You're a guy who has used transfers. So where are you on the portal?
I don't like it. Listen, first of all, there's nothing wrong with transferring. It's got a bad word. Look, Joe's been promoted many times. I've been transferred and got a chance to get some upward mobility. It's a great country. You guys have worked your way up. There's nothing wrong with transferring. But I do think that, and I could tell you, you should have to go confront your wife if you're leaving the family. You should have to go, seriously.
Yeah.
You should have to go sit down and talk to your coach about leaving, rather than just putting your name in a transfer portal because you don't want to have a difficult conversation. Because I can tell you right now, I have had those conversations with players that were uncertain, and I came to find out that there was pain in their life that I just didn't see or didn't know about. And more often than not, when they chose to not transfer, they thanked God they stayed. And they stayed the course. That can be true of families. It can be true of players and coaching. That's not to say that I'm not equating divorce with transfer, but I'm just saying that sometimes, if you can have a hard conversation, you'll know, hey, you know what? After that conversation, I know I should leave. Or after that conversation, you know what? I may stick this thing out. It may not be quite as bad. And then the person that you love learns something about understanding your pain.
I will counter with, there has been a few coaches over time who, you know, a player has gone and voiced their concern, and then the coach turned around and said, you know what, you can transfer, but here's 28 schools I'm going to block you from going to.
Well, my policy has always been you know, as far as a lease is concerned, I asked them just not to go in the league. You know, I just think that would be – I don't want you to have to play in the league against your teammates. If you insist, I wouldn't stop anybody if there was some sort of, you know, plea on that part. But, you know, for me, look, if you want to leave, there's the door. See you.
How do you make it work so well with transfers?
I don't have a ton of transfers. I don't. But sometimes, look, I think it's great sometimes to have a transfer come in and sit out. I don't even think it's great to have them eligible right away. I think it's great when they come in, set out. They get a year of physically ready. They understand the system more, and they invest in their game and their body and their academics. So they're good to have in practice, knowing that you've got somebody returning that knows what you're doing and they know what they're doing.
And just so you know, the reason I'm harping on transfers, one, I want, you know, your opinion on it. Two, the new UNLV coach here in town, TJ Altenberger, is trying to change things so there's a little more continuity so that he can build around 3- and 4-year players. So he used transfers this year because he was a little short, but I don't know that he's going to do that. I think he's going to go with, you know, more of the freshman route. So it's just everyone has a different way to build their teams. Hey, Chris Beard, who was here at UNLV for like a week, I think he was going to go heavy on the transfer route. So everyone's got a different philosophy.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with where you're at.
Yep.
And the school you're at, the environment you're at. I know for me, when I first got to Auburn, I had to rely on transfers just to field a team.
Yep.
You know, and the other thing, too, is in fielding a team, we weren't very competitive. We certainly weren't any kind of threat to win a championship. And so then the kind of freshmen that I could attract when I first got the job weren't the kind of freshmen that could help me get where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
So with some transfers, you know, we didn't win championships, but at least we were competitive. And then I was able to get some young high school kids, and you know, particularly those young men like Anthony McLemore, Austin Wiley, Danielle Purifoy, to buy in and see the light at the end of the tunnel. And you know what? They've been rewarded, and so has Auburn.
You got one of my favorite players over there, Jamal Johnson, who played for us at Memphis and was one of the hardest kids to recruit to try to get him out of that area, especially when UAB was all over him. And I remember, Coach, when he called me and said, Bruce Pearl's interested, and I remember you called me and we talked about it, and he said, Coach, give me a word. Tell me something about Bruce Pearl. And I described Bruce Pearl, and I said, man, that's hard. He goes, what do you mean it's hard? I said, I'll just give you one word, winner. And if you were going to tell us, Coach, something about you that we don't know, what would you? How would you describe yourself to us? You have any hobbies?
Well, I would say, Joe, I'd say this, and I appreciate the compliment. I make up for a lack of ability with just passion, a deep caring for what I do, for the people that support us, for the players that I coach, for my staff, and I try and reward you know, the kind of behavior that's gonna bring championships, just like a father would do, and so that's kind of what we've always done. We've obviously centered our program about trying to do what God would have us do. You know, what would He have us do here? And then know that gives us the best chance to be rewarded. And if not, well, at least we know we've done the right thing. And if you surround yourself with coaches that are good fathers, that are good men, that are doing the right things, that are hardworking, that's going to rub off on your players. And ultimately for us, it's led to championships.
Coach, before we say goodbye, I want to tell you one thing. No pressure. Now, we're going to tell you, you're going to beat Georgia. And this is why. Oh. We've had 5 interviews. We've had Fran McCaffrey on, Brian Dutcher, Larry Gostowiak, and Eric Musselman. Everybody won their next game. And there were some big games now. You know, Iowa had to beat Texas Tech. You know, Dutcher had to beat Creighton. You're going to beat Georgia because you were on this show.
Wow.
So if we need you again, you know, some other time, if you need a win, just let us know, and we'll get you back on here, baby.
Joe calls me anytime. I'm at your service.
That's awesome. Coach, good luck the rest of the way. We're rooting for you. Keep that streak going alive, okay?
Okay, Coach. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
There you go. Bruce Pearl, coach of Auburn. Beating teams remaining in the nation along with San Diego State.
Maybe we have to bring Dutcher back on. Maybe he's going to need some help because he can help me with the pizza. If we bring Dutcher, like, I'm worried about when they go to New Mexico, and I'm worried about when they come to UNLV. Maybe we'll have to have him on the air so that we can get the pizza.
Nah, he's banned.
He's banned?
Nah, he can't come on anymore. Sorry.
We're done.
The program director checked in. He's like, nap.
Ari.
No more. No, it's not Ari's decision. We got bosses. They, you know, they say they dictate all the guests we can have on. I have to run it by him.
I mean, Ari brings you some eggnog and some Popeye's chicken, and then he gets to make these decisions?
It's the way it works.
Man.
He's got a lot of power here. Unreal. Now, that was funny. That was a funny line. I don't think Joe realized how funny that was.
That wasn't that funny.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Joe. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go twice next week.
All right. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
All right. Take care.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.